and welcome back to Season 2 of Industry Room. Today's guest is Jason Sisoyev, guitarist for the Portland rock band Coastlands. Coastlands is an instrumental post-rock group, which is part of why we were so excited to talk about their music. Coastlands makes music that is moving, relaxing, and usually epic, all without words, leaving the music to express itself. Ned and Jason linked up via Zoom to talk about Jason's musical roots, the thriving post-rock scene, and Coastland's upcoming record. Let's go to their conversation now.
So how are you guys doing? Have you been all separated or?
Yeah. We've been all separated for this entire time. Three of us live here in Portland, and then our drummer lives up in Seattle. So we're pretty used to the long distance writing and recording and that whole thing. Like this record that we're about to come out with, we wrote it pretty much all over email in the same way that we did with our drummer, because we'd send files up to his studio and he'd send them down to here and we'd be like, oh, that sounds rad, and then get all together and practice them and play all together and all that. But so yeah, it's been kind of weird still, just like being at home all day.
Yeah, it's a strange existence.
I know. where are you located?
Baltimore, actually. Oh, so okay. Like complete other side of the
dude. That's wild. Yeah, Baltimore's rad.
Yeah, I mean, it's a cool place. Yeah, thank you so much for doing this, by the way. It's really exciting.
Of course.
All right, so first question, what was your like the music of your childhood? Like, what kind of stuff did you grow up on?
Man, for me, I grew up listening to so much like 90s Christian alternative, and then eventually just regular 90s music that was played on the radio, and then it kind of evolved once I got into skateboarding and rollerblading. It kind of got into more like black metal and post-hardcore, and then just tons of emo music too after that. Because it was kind of like this big progression of me realizing what music I like and what music I really, really don't like. I mean, not to say like DC Talk and Audio Adrenaline isn't cool, but it
it's a time and a place.
Kind of pales in comparison to a lot. Yeah, totally.
I have a soft spot for DC Talk.
I mean, yeah, like I put on a couple of their records the other day and was like, I mean, it holds up for what it is, but it like reminds me of a very, very specific time.
It's like youth group events and things like that.
Totally. Yeah. It's like what kind of got me into skateboarding was like those youth group events where they'd be like, we brought a half pipe and all the pizza you can eat. And like a DC Talk cover band is gonna play, and you're like, "What? Like, this is so sick!" But yeah, so kind of all over the map. But and then eventually just sort of focus. Like, there was a good natural progression from that. I was like, "Oh, I like these elements, and this other band offers that. What are other bands that sound like that? Oh, okay." And then kind of just progressively moved into like the heavier music and all that.
So like where in that progression did you start actually playing music?
Let's see. I started playing music super young. I mean, I started out on drums, and I mean, my parents sold my older sister. She had a violin. She moved out. They sold that. They bought me just the worst drum set, but it was like at the time I thought it was the coolest thing ever. So I started playing to, I'm just trying to remember like early records that I used to play to, like early Thrice records and like other, just other bands that had, there's like really interesting percussive sections, just kind of drumming to that. And I was maybe between like 10 and 12, maybe 13 or something like that. And then eventually I bought a guitar. It was an acoustic guitar from a neighbor across the street for like $20. And I think he burned me like a Blink-182 CD with it or something like that. And then I was like, I'm gonna learn all the like I'm gonna learn like Dude Ranch all on acoustic guitar. And then I was like, when I learned to read tabs, and was just like learning to play that. And then I'm trying to think if there's like any. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of led me to where I'm at now. Is now I pretty much only play guitar. I can like play other instruments, but that's the one that was like, as soon as I started playing it, I was like, this feels right. Like drums are fun, but drums for me always felt way too complicated. Like there was just too much going on.
How did you, you probably get this a lot, but like, how did you get on the kind of like strictly instrumental path?
Well, I think it was like around in high school when I started. I mean, I was still really stuck on acoustic guitar. So I had a project that I was kind of working on, and a friend came over and introduced me to like instrumental post-rock, you know, Caspian, Explosions in the Sky, stuff like that, kind of the early mid 2000s post-rock. And so I started playing that, and just, I don't know, I found it interesting because it was just so different than anything I'd been used to. But it was like, having listened to a lot of heavier music of that time, bands were already starting to incorporate, you know, either fully instrumental songs, like on some of the Under Oath records, they would put fully instrumental songs, and just, and I just remember having such a big impact because they held so much weight without having any lyrical direction, but you knew exactly what that song was about. But of course, that meaning is going to change from person to person, which is pretty cool. So it kind of just interested me, just because I wasn't ever particularly that good at writing lyrics. And I always felt like that was the thing that I did the last. So I would like, I'd work on arrangements, I'd work on all the different things and kind of dream up the song and then be like, oh crap, well now I got to write lyrics to fit all this. And when my friend introduced me to kind of instrumental music, I was like, man, this feels kind of like home. Like this feels really comfortable, and it feels really exciting just because it's different. So I just got, we started working on music with just using basically two guitars and then that same drum set that I had in my parents' basement, and just kind of made just songs and got really involved in the emerging, I guess, online instrumental post-rock scene, which is now like much, much bigger than I could have ever imagined. But first coming across it was just such a cool moment, just being like, oh, like I can layer this, and like I want to communicate this mood and this feeling, and I don't know really how to do it with words, but I can easily write this guitar part that it feels like it's mimicking how I'm feeling. So that was kind of the allure for me, and kind of what got me into it and got me started with it.
So I gotta be honest, I'm not really familiar with the scene as a whole of like instrumental post-rock. So like, how would you describe it to someone like myself that doesn't know that much about the ins and outs of it?
Man, it's something special. Like it feels like a family. Mm-hmm. It feels like it's kind of always existed, but now people are starting to find each other just with the internet and with festivals that are popping up. Like there's Dunk Festival in Belgium that's been going for maybe, it's got to be over 10, 15 years or something like that. They've been doing it. And that festival, what, like 2,000-3,000 people, and it sells out every single year. And it's just this, it's like a really tight knit family. I don't know. It's super different than any part of any music scene that I've been part of throughout the years. It's diverse with like bands from across the world, really, because there's, since the majority of the bands are instrumental, not all of them, it's not exclusively instrumental, but there's bands from like India, Iceland, Germany, like they're everywhere. And it's just, it kind of is this common thread that weaves through a bunch of different continents and connects people in a really, really cool way.
That's awesome.
Red. I was like, yeah, I don't blame you for not knowing, because if you don't listen to like this specific thing, and I feel like it's got to be like this with most genres of music, is you find your people, you get connected, and you just work together on something, and it becomes something so much bigger just because you're all doing something for one common cause, or you know, you have a need to do something, or whatever that may be. But if you're not really pursuing that, then it basically doesn't exist.
No, I think that's a great thing, though, because I feel like for a lot of young musicians, maybe in the past, there might have been a pressure to like change their sound or like maybe more adapt to like their, I don't know, like, local scene or whatever, you know, like just the people like around them. But now there's the internet, like you can be connected with any musicians you like, basically. So yeah, it's a good thing, I think.
Yeah, and I think it's so rad because it's given us the ability to work with other musicians within the community just by being like, hey, do you want to collaborate on this song real quick? I'm gonna send it over to you, or just being able to be like, I'm trying to think, like we wanted to work with like certain producers for like singles or songs in the past, and so we just wrote them an email and send them the album. They're like, oh yeah, we'll totally work on that. And we're like, what is this? This is crazy that you can just connect with somebody. You're like, I love their work. I love their vision for things. And I want them to be on board with what I'm doing. And that's so, so freaking cool.
We'll be right back to the interview after a brief message from our sponsor.
So, what does, I guess like the typical recording session look like for you guys? It sounds like it's a little bit different. You already mentioned that you guys as a band are a little bit separated all the time.
When it comes to writing, we'll exchange ideas. It'll be kind of between me and the other guitarist, Jordan, who will send emails back and forth, or we'll just send texts back and forth. It'll either be just an audio clip of one of us playing at home or a video of us playing at home and just being like, hey, do you like this? Or this is kind of my vision on everything. And then we'll try and get it a little bit more focused before we send it to the group chat and be like, hey, here's an idea that we have. It's, you know, maybe it's super scattered or something like that, but here's, you know, we recorded it to a click. We'll send it to a drummer, bassist, and they'll goof on it. They'll send it back to us. And then it always evolves, especially after we get bass and drums, because then you hear the rhythm section evolving, and then both of us guitarists will go back. We'll kind of re-record demos, and we'll do that for, I think for this last record, I think we did that for about 6 or 8 months of just going back and forth. Of course, that was before quarantine too. So it was generally every Sunday. Me and the other guitarist, he would come over to my place because I've got a home studio set up, and we'd sit, we'd demo guitar parts, we'd, you know, drink coffee, hang out, and just kind of just flesh out ideas. Kind of nothing's off the table. Like we'll just work on things until we feel like that's good enough to send. And usually we'll do kind of just really crummy electronic drums to it, or maybe it is just straight to a click, just to kind of communicate what we're trying to do with that specific guitar part, and then we'll send it out and go from there. But right now it is just fully just texting and emailing back and forth, and then once we actually get to the studio, at that point we have a pretty good outline of what the song's gonna be. All of us have our parts written out, and then we really just at least for this last record, we did everything one by one just so we could fully focus on each other. Whereas in the past we would do it all together. We'd record as a band, we'd record live, which was great. And it gave it a totally, totally different feel. But this way was super cool. Cause it really, I mean, we spent, I think two or three days on drums and then the same on bass and guitar, or maybe we spent like a week on bass or something like that. But just all of us sitting in the room while the other person's recording, and not really having a time limit on anything, just kind of letting it run and still just being really open to changing things. I mean, there was a lot of things that we changed in the studio because for whatever reason that day, some guitar part or some drum part either wasn't working, or, you know, someone was goofing around and they came up with an idea that we all just, you know, all of us stop and look at each other and are like, that was sick. Like, you got to do that. Or like that had so much energy to it. So, it's definitely evolved from the way that we recorded, say like 5 years ago, which has been rad. Cause I feel like it's really streamlined the way that we record and the way that we create which is a way that I never thought we would have, I would have never imagined we would be doing it this way. Cause this way I always thought felt very sterile and felt very just kind of stiff. But this way it's just sort of, everyone is focusing on themselves until we're all in the room together. And then it's like, oh, I didn't realize you played it like that. That's like, that's amazing. Like maybe, you know, drop it down to this and do that thing there. And then it's just, and then it becomes kind of more the collaborative thing. Cause you've worked out your own parts with yourself, which has been kind of cool and kind of intense at times, like putting yourself under a microscope and then be like showing it to everyone and being like, all right, I wrote all of my parts for this song. I hope you don't hate them.
So would you say there's a more, like when you have a part that you're getting ready to bring, do you have like a kind of a concrete idea of what it's going to be, or are you expecting it to change based on everyone else's part for that song?
Usually expecting it to change. There's usually key elements, like a phrase or a motif or something like that, or even just a key of the song that we want to keep, you know, whoever started it, like, hey, I'm really gung ho about this area. But once we all start laying down different tracks, we all are very aware that the very, very end project or product is going to be like wildly, wildly different. It's going to have little glimpses of what it used to sound like, but it's still going to be just insanely different. Like, I think one song we had 12 versions of it. And I listened back to the very, very first time that we all played it together, and then all the revisions throughout, and then basically what the album version sounded like. And we were like, oh, like the heart of that is in there, but for the most part, it is an insanely different song.
So you mentioned like the songs have meaning. Do you think the meaning changes as you change it and evolves, or does the meaning stay the same?
I feel like the meaning changes because a lot of the songs that we've been writing, they started off from a more of just like a really dark perspective. And then as everyone started to put their own spin on it by, you know, what one thing was huge was when we added our bassist Andy, when he started playing and he started putting his own spin and his ideas on the tracks, we were like, whoa, this song now has like this more victorious feel, more like triumphant, and it's not as dark, but in a really, really cool way. And it's kind of finding the middle ground between those two elements. And I've always been fascinated with that tension between the two. So if there's an element in the mix that's like a little bit darker, a little bit more atmospheric, but then there's another element that is at either the opposite of that, or maybe even just complementary in a similar tone and feel to it, just how that can create this really bizarre but interesting mood overall. So it definitely evolves, I'd say.
So I'm also curious, like, how does an ambient post-rock show go down? Like, is it pretty much the same as any other show, or do you do things differently based on like the fact that you have a more, I guess, non-traditional song structure?
Kind of yes or no. Like they're similar in the way that at least for us, we try and just put on a big high energy show. Because that's what we like. We don't want, I mean, some, all right, I'm trying to think. I was like, what I was about to say was almost sounding like I was like talking trash on other bands, but I was like, no, that's not it. I think on that. But I'd say it varies, but yeah, at least for us, there's like, I've never felt the need to compensate for not having a singer or not having, you know, a verse, chorus. But it can be a little strange if you're, especially on tours, if you're playing with bands or you're playing shows in cities that you've never played before, and people, this might be their first introduction. So I always aim to have our first introduction to people just be like, whoa, like that band was super high energy. And then on top of that, like I try and still like the best part about playing shows is the people and getting to hang out and meet people after and, you know, chat about music and chat about their city and all that. So it's like similar in the same way that we're performing and we're putting on a show. We're just trying to engage people. We're trying to get them to feel something. And sometimes that's by being extremely loud and just, like overly eccentric or by being so quiet that you could hear a conversation in the room, if that all makes sense.
So like, do people mosh? They just kind of vibe out? Like, what does one do while you guys are playing?
Man, it's so mixed. Like, we played Dunkfest in Belgium last year, which is that just massive festival for instrumental. Well, it's not just instrumental. It's like post-metal, doom, post-rock, and the likes. And I would say, like, that festival, everyone is very, like, you know, some people are dancing, but the majority of people are just standing and being quiet, whereas some shows people are like, yeah, slam dancing, moshing. So sometimes people are just talking super, super loud if it's a bar. It's all over the map, or I feel like it's probably the same for most bands. Well, maybe not like, you know, metal or doom, because that's a very, very, it's a very specific response you're looking for. But I mean, we just want people to feel something, have fun, and ultimately just hang out.
So you mentioned a new album that you guys are working on. What's the timeline look like for that?
So we should be putting out a single in July, and then the album should be out in the fall. It kind of got screwed up with this whole Corona thing, but we should have it. I mean, the record's been done since January or December, something like that. But that's kind of that's a rough timeline we're working with, and I'm pushing right now to make that happen, just because we've already started when we're 3 or 4 songs into a newer album. So I'm like, we're going to be ready to record by the time we put this record out, we're going to be able to record something brand new, which will be super fun and different mood, just with all the weird stuff that's been going on this year.
So you said, sorry, the newer record, or new, not newer, the new record is the one that you went in with kind of a darker tone and it came into a lighter tone, or that was your...
Totally. Yeah. So that's the one that it definitely started from a darker, heavier place and just has evolved into something that just we couldn't have predicted it, which was great, because we really just every step of the way tried to keep an open mind and just respect everyone's ideas and input from across the board. Of like, if we showed it to anyone, we're like, hey, what do you think on this song? And if they're like, it's too long, or like, that part felt weird, like, okay, like, well, let's put that under a microscope and let's figure out why that felt weird. Because I mean, this feels like the first record that at the very, very end of it, all of us had nothing left. Like we were just, we'd spent, you know, over a year revising, writing, and just demoing everything out. So then by the time we got to the studio, it was just long, long days of just, let's try this thing, let's try this thing, let's try that. And then by the end, I was like, there's nothing I want to add to this. Like this record feels like it's honestly, it's just us it's just us pretty much. Like we've tried out every idea. Whereas past records, I'll re-listen to songs, or while we're playing them live, I'll find myself changing things, 'cause I think like, oh, that'll actually be a little bit more impactful. Whereas this record, playing it now, I'm like, I'm good. Like this feels great. Like this gets me pumped up. I'm proud to put it out. I'm going to be stoked to be able to play it live again. And well, ever. We've never
played it live. Awesome, dude. That's exciting.
Yeah. We're all super stoked. Like every day we're like, God, let's just get this thing out. But it's like all the planning you have to do and account for promotion and artwork and label stuff. And like, I mean, all that stuff is super fun, but at the end of the day, we're just like, we want to get this out. We want to show it to people. We're stoked on it. And like the few people that we've showed it to have been like, I can't wait till this is out too. Like, I want to listen to it a ton. I'm like, cool. All right. That's a good first response.
So are you having to forego some of the things you would normally do for a rollout just because you want it out there and people, like, things are different right now? Or are you pretty much doing it the normal way?
We're doing it similar to the normal way, minus shows. I mean, we had a couple tours planned and local shows and just other in-person promotion stuff that we were going to do, but now we can't really do it, or we might have to do it closer to the album, depending on, or closer to the album release, just depending on how things are and if we can get people together and if we can put a show on or anything like that. But that's the biggest difference. Other than that, I feel like all this time at home is just given like, okay, here's a long list of the things we all need to do. Now let's divide and conquer. Like let's get all of our social posts ready, you know, 6 months in advance so that by that time we don't have to do anything. 'Cause what else are we doing every
right. day? That's pretty much all my questions. If you got anything else to say or let the listeners know.
Man, I can't really. Yeah, I feel like we covered a ton, and I'm just yeah. And thanks for chatting, man. This was fun.
Through listening back and editing this interview, Ned and I were both struck by the intelligent way Jason held himself and explained the instrumental post-rock scene. It was super interesting for us to become more familiar with the music and expand our knowledge, which is one of the main things we try to do here at Industry Herb. We hope you enjoyed. We can't wait to hear what Coastlands has for us next. This episode of Industry Herb was produced by Ned Kuchmenda and edited by Lainey Kuchmenda. Huge thanks to Jason Sisoyev for coming on the show. Intro music is Tired Eyes by Coastlands and will be linked below along with the band's other music and socials. Make sure to check them out. Our outro song is by OK Thanks Baby and will also be linked in the description. Graphic design for this episode was done by Liam Fitzsimmons and logo design by Andre Frew. Make sure to follow Industry Herb on Instagram and check out our new Season 2 playlist on Spotify with songs by artists we've interviewed. There may even be hints about upcoming interviews. Thank you so much for listening. We will see you next week for another interview on Industry Herb.